Ragtime, huh?
Ragtime. We're back to ragtime. Next week it'll be something. But for now, this is Sam Wishnuff playing Shave 'Em Dry. I have many questions about that title. So many questions. For instance, is that the opposite of shave them wet? Does shave them dry mean shave them without using like shaving cream?
That's the thing, without shaving cream. Like, but that was probably an expression back then of something.
Yeah.
But I'll try to figure out without really looking it up.
Without looking it up.
Here's what we'll do. Let's guess what the expression means in 1917 terms. And then we'll see if we can look it up and how accurate you are.
Okay. Now, you have a beard right now, but I'm sure have you dry shaved?
Yeah.
I've dry shaved too.
Yeah.
It's not that pleasant. You'd much rather at least put water on your face.
And that's what I'm picturing. I'm like, oh, like roughing them up. Like I rough somebody up.
Okay.
You know, it's not a good thing. But then at the same time, why would you call this song that? It's not like a rough song.
No. And it sounds halfway like a threat. And halfway like a turn-on line. So maybe this is one of those like Ma Rainey songs.
I'm thinking closer. Listen, if this is a song in 1917, it's a threat. Because you know, you did not discuss such sexual things in ragtime music.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what do you think? Let's look up, what's the actual meaning of shave 'em dry?
I'll find out.
Is there an Urban Dictionary from 1917?
There's a Devil's Dictionary by Ambrose Bierce.
That's what I was thinking. This music is very good background music for looking things up on a computer. You cannot say,
yeah.
Like, I'm looking at you now, and you kind of look like you're in a silent film. Did you find anything yet?
I realize I'm taking a long time and the music playing, so I can't cut this out. Oh, yes, shave 'em dry, meaning. As a term, shave 'em dry appears to have layers of meaning. At one level, it refers to mean and aggressive action.
Ah.
But as a sexual theme, it refers to intercourse without preliminary lovemaking.
Ah.
So I was right. It's dirty. It's very dirty.
And you think do you think the song was the aggressive one or was it the sexual one?
I found other people covering Shave 'em Dry and they're adding a lot of X-rated lyrics, so I think it's the latter.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah, but I guess it would be the equivalent of like rough them up
I'll be honest with you, I didn't know in 1917 people had discovered foreplay yet. I didn't think that sex was being done for pleasure at that time. It was just
well, some of the songs were very ribald. Yeah, they didn't quite know innuendo yet. It would be like, put your hot dog in my bun. I can connect those dots. Try a little harder.
So do you think like somebody's like in the audience listening to this music, like that's over there, and they went, I can't believe you're getting away with this right now.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're sitting here listening to a dirty song like Shave 'em Dry.
That was probably played in a whorehouse. That's where jazz music came from. That's what the word jazz means.
It means whores?
Hmm?
Really?
No, change the A to an I. That's where it comes from.
Really?
Yeah.
Jazz music?
Yeah. It was music to have sex by. And that's why it's all up-tempo.
How come I didn't know this?
I don't know. Yeah, it started in the New Orleans cat houses.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure. Really. So all the times when you know, people were talking about their love of jazz, they're almost saying how much they love jazz music.
Yes, exactly.
When Bill Cosby
had the Playboy Jazz Festival, all of a sudden it makes more sense why he called it that. Yeah.
And jazz cigarettes.
Oh yeah, that one. It's way too easy to do this. Whoever uses the word jazz, you can find an incredibly sexual
and the synonym. The basketball team, the Utah Jazz.
that's the number one state for pornography.
And jazz, the female American gladiator.
And the black transformer. It was the first transformer I had. I was the first kid in my block to get a transformer. Everyone else was getting.
How do you know he was black? How do you know he was black?
Scatman Crothers did his voice.
Oh, okay. But say he's still just a truck.
Yes, yes. He was a Porsche, I think. Mm-hmm. And he was a white exterior Porsche. Mm-hmm. But when he talked, it was clearly Scatman Crothers, if I'm remembering it right.
It may have been.
Yeah.
Maybe. So he's definitely black, though, just because a black man does his voice black.
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, there's some sort of white people voice black characters, right?
And
black.
Yes, and there's a very convincing...
So Elmo the puppet is black in your mind.
Maybe I went a little too far in saying that, because there's a fan theory that Optimus Prime is also black, even though, you know, they're Transformers. They're cars. They're not necessarily black or white.
Why is he black in the fan theory?
I think just because we need more good, positive black Transformers.
But they haven't really done it. They haven't figured out from any sort of clues about, like, you know, why he might be black. Like, he hasn't made any mention of, like, you know, his ancestors were on his ancestors were you know, farming equipment on a plantation at one time.
Grandfather was like a cotton thresher. That would explain that would be convincing backstory if you wanted to delineate that line of reasoning in a Transformer spinoff. Welcome to the 1917 podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan. Joining me, as always, is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy, ahoy. Yes.
Our sponsor this week is from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Waste No Food. This was an advertisement that went out in 1917 to tell people to, well, not waste food. Keep good food out of your garbage pail and kitchen sink. Don't feed high-priced human food to hogs or chickens. Household waste, about $700 million. And now here's the Secretary of Agriculture in a quote from 1917. It's a long quote, so I'm just going to rattle through it.
Or we could skip that.
Or we could skip it, okay.
But give me the highlights. Give me the highlights from the Secretary of Agriculture.
As an instance of improper handling, it is discovered that in the preparation of potatoes, 20% of the edible portion in many cases is discarded.
20% of potatoes discarded?
Yeah.
So, like, the peel.
The peel, yeah. The peel, and I guess when you cut out the eyes.
I mean, I don't mind potato peel. I'll eat some potato peel.
No, I love potato peel. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Food is wasted when anything edible is allowed to go to the garbage pail or allowed to spoil for lack of proper handling. Food is wasted when too much is served at a meal. Food is wasted when too much is prepared for a meal. Food is wasted when burned or spoiled in cooking. Food is wasted when handled carelessly.
And that's how the Kaiser wins.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that brings us into what we're going to talk about this week, which is a Library of Congress exhibit about World War I. I visited there just a day or two ago, and I had quite a time getting there.
Why were you were in Washington a couple of days?
Yes. Oh, let me show you what I got. Opening up my wallet.
Is it going to take as long as it took you to look up Shiv'em Dry?
That is my Library of Congress reader card.
Wow.
So I'm an official researcher now.
Really?
Yep. Now, in order to get this...
So how do you come in to fit, like, you have to prove that you have done research? Like,
To get this card, you need to be an American citizen over 16 years of age. Mm-hmm. And
you're both?
And fill out a form.
And so I can do it, too.
That's it, yeah.
Anybody can do this.
Anybody can do this.
And you go have access to everything in the Library of Congress.
Exactly.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they have a DVD section also?
They have a huge section of... photography. They have another section for films, for the film archive, but it's not a place where you go in there and watch. But they do have a theater, and they do have movie screenings there.
Were you doing research? Were you researching?
Yes. I shouldn't talk about that yet, but while I was there, I started to do a tour. The building itself is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm used to seeing, you know, nice opulent buildings, but this was so over the top, and I wasn't expecting it at all, much less to see a building that looked seriously like the inside of the Vatican in terms of, like, wow, this is what they're going for, that level of opulence, all talking about the greatness of books. And they had the names of all these great writers in the last 500 years.
They had your name on there.
Yes. Yeah, they had my name because they're a big fan of the four-page story I had in Bloodlight 3, an anthology from the horror writers. And
You had that, really?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Published. Yeah.
Yes, I've had a horror story.
You have better credits than I even realized. You wrote like a Tales from the Crypt, practically.
I would love to write a Tales from the Crypt episode. Not that they're making it anymore.
Yeah, just right for at home.
Yeah. So
would it have a 1980s guest star also?
So the Library of Congress, this is one thing I did know, was founded by Thomas Jefferson. He donated his private library of about 4,000 books.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see his library. And it turns out it's there on a permanent exhibition. But you have to walk through another corridor to get there. And down that corridor is where they had placed the World War I exhibit.
You know, this is something else you might not know about Thomas Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
He impregnated Optimus Prime's great-great-great-great-great-grandmother. Right before he founded the Library of Congress.
Optimus Prime's great-great-great-grandmother is like a cotton gin, you realize? So, the exhibit on World War I taught me a huge amount. I've been trying to educate myself about World War I all year long. I mean, we both have. But it was great to see not just someone who knows a lot more than I am talking about it, but to have all this original source material and reprinted documents and art from the time. So I took a bunch of notes, and that's what we're going to talk about, all the stuff from 1917 that I missed about the war.
Okay.
Okay. This week, by the way, is the Battle of... it's Y-P-R-E-S. I learned how to spell it, or I learned how to say it, and now I've forgotten.
Erpes.
It's like ease, or ALF, okay. or it's something very non-intuitive. But it's hard to make light of this because...
There's some notes you had there.
Because 250,000 people died on each side during this battle. And so that's like 500,000 people in one town in Belgium, I think. And this was the definitive, just send people in until there's no more people and just everyone is going to die and the whole town gets destroyed. There's not even bricks left. It's just full on rubble. And they kept on sending people into the rubble because there were people on the other side of the rubble. And this was like the very worst of World War I. That's going on right now, 100 years ago today.
Mm-hmm.
You can read more about it in a graphic novel I found called Treaties, Trenches, Mud, and Blood by Nathan Hale. That was shockingly thorough and comprehensive. And it is no slight against Nathan Hale, the author and illustrator, that I don't remember how to pronounce Ypres.
I'm picturing that like there's like old books there that you could possibly, and you went right for the graphic novel, didn't you?
This one I
read. Oh, look, a funny book.
This one I found by myself, and I read it beforehand. But here's one of the things I learned about 1917, thanks to the Library of Congress, is hyphenates. Have we talked about hyphenates?
No.
So a hyphenate was like I would call myself Irish, but of course I'm in America, so I would call myself an Irish American with a hyphen in the middle,
mm-hmm.
and that's what a lot of people did, but 100 years ago, it had a political connotation. When if you said you're an Irish American, it meant that you didn't consider yourself an American. It meant that your loyalties were divided between your home country and your current country, and that became very important during the war when half the countries of the world were at war with the other half.
Yeah.
So if you said you were a German American, that was your way of saying I'm kind of rooting for both sides in World War
I. You can see how this plays out.
Yeah. Yeah, so there was a fight to just call yourself an American, which also meant to kind of cut off any connection to your old country, to your old culture, to stop speaking the language, eating the food, start doing everything like Americans, start, you know, changing your name so it doesn't sound so German or Italian or Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is exactly what I should have done this when I started doing stand-up, I realized. Because my name has never been pronounced correctly.
What did you get instead of Nardiello?
My name looks harder than this. I get a lot of Nardelio.
Huh.
Yeah, Nardelio seems to be like the biggest one. Nardelli, Nardone.
Yeah, maybe because I'm from North Jersey, but I don't think of it that hard of a name.
I didn't, but, you know, I should have changed my name. I should have been like a 1917 Italian.
Yeah.
Change it to
Goldstein or something. You're the only guy in the world who changed his name to a Jewish name.
I'm thinking Vinny Canterbury.
Vinnie Canterbury.
Yeah.
You can do the Rodney Dangerfield thing. Just go incredibly English. So much so that it's just shocking.
Mm-hmm.
I also learned about Carrie Chapman Catt. She was a suffragette. And 100 years ago today, she basically changed the opinion of the suffrage movement. She was a very canny political operator. And the suffragettes were against the war.
Yeah.
And because of that, a lot of people said that they were un-American because the American thing was to support the boys. And when the boys went overseas, you needed to support them. Therefore, you needed to be in favor of the war.
I'm glad that kind of thinking doesn't go on anymore. This is
yeah, we're a totally enlightened time, and it's a beautiful future, and there's flying cars and replicators everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So Carrie Chapman Catt, she was from Ripon, Wisconsin. I'm from Wisconsin too, so I know Ripon is where Ripon Good Cookies used mm-hmm. to come from.
You're from everywhere.
I am. I'm like the Johnny Cash song.
Yeah.
So what Carrie Chapman Catt, and I don't know enough about her to know if she went by Carrie or Chapman or Catt. I'm just going to say the whole thing like she's a presidential assassin.
Mm-hmm.
What she did was decided to move the suffragettes in favor of war. And this was not to benefit war. This was to benefit suffragettes. To say, well, if I get more of the country on our side, they will vote for people to vote women in.
Mm-hmm.
To give women the vote. And everything she did was for that end. And she had lots of other terrible things she said in order to get people to vote for her. Like in South Dakota, she was very big into promoting anti-Indian racism.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that if you give women a vote, it's kind of like weakening the vote of the drunken Indians. And she talked about the slum denizens in lots of other states who got votes and how women would be able to counteract that. She went down to Mississippi and South Carolina, and she gave a speech saying, white supremacy will be strengthened, not weakened, by women's suffrage.
We know why she's doing this.
Yes, we do.
Legitimate question. I'm not making like a jokey question.
Okay.
If she had a statue of her, I'm assuming there's a statue of her somewhere.
There probably is, yeah.
Would it get taken down based on this?
True. Sure. I don't think it would, because I...
Would we go, well, she didn't mean it?
I think, yeah. Yeah, I think the she doesn't mean it gets would ameliorate that. Plus the fact that she did good things in addition to saying these bad things. And she's 50 years beyond the Confederacy. And there are people nowadays who are saying stuff like that and worse stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But back then she was considered like one of the big political talents.
See, I imagine even now the term suffragette would be considered and I think you can't throw the et on anything.
No, I think they were just called the movement was a suffrage movement.
Because women's sports have changed that. Women's sports for years would be like, the et gets thrown on the...
Yeah.
On the name, now you can't do that. Or lady something, now you know how to do it.
Right, but...
Which is good. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I get why it's done, but...
Just a day or two ago, people were saying how the U.S. soccer team was not going to be in the World Cup this year. And as lots of people pointed out, that's the U.S. men's... soccer team. The U.S. women's soccer team has been in there, done incredibly well the last three World Cups in a row.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the men's team that's not going to be in this year.
Yeah.
But when you say U.S. soccer, you think men's soccer. If you say women's soccer, then you think women's soccer. But the women are doing
better. I mainly think I really don't care. One way or the other.
Well, I'm talking about soccer, so of course you don't care.
No.
I also, at the Library of Congress, learned about the 4-Minute Men. This is not, this is a hyphen between 4 and minute, not minute and men.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like 4-minute men, it's 4-minute men. The idea was it took 4 minutes in the silent movie theater to switch film reels from one to another. And during those 4 minutes, the guy at the organ would just kind of vape and play whatever he wanted to.
He play, you know, shave him dry.
Shave him dry, exactly. Mm-hmm. But they needed, the U.S. war effort, needed people to raise funds and to let people know about what was going on. This was like the days before newsreels. And if you think about how many thousands of movie theaters there were and how many dozens of shows they had per day and how many reel changes they had, because a reel was only, 10, 15 minutes long?
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge amount of time to get up and speak. And they needed someone at every show in every theater to give basically the same talk about donating to war bonds.
Yeah.
So there were a whole lot of, if you wanted to be a public speaker, if you're a Toastmaster, there was a need for you in 1917. Mm-hmm. You spent your whole day just at the local ISIS theater off Troost Street in Kansas City trying to solicit funds.
That's another thing that they're probably changing the name of, the ISIS theater.
The ISIS theater. They shouldn't, because the name ISIS has been around for thousands of years. A bunch of douchebags in the desert don't get to grab that name and say that it's theirs. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm in favor of them being called ISIL, just because there's too many other things named ISIS.
Yeah, there are nothing else would name ISIL.
No, that poor dog from Downton Abbey shouldn't get dragged into
this. I know, they killed that dog off just to not have a dog named ISIS.
Yeah. Something else I learned at the Library of Congress was the Women's Land Army. This was a movement that began in Britain because they were in the war beforehand. Essentially, all of the farmers became soldiers and left. Someone needed to plow the fields and milk the cows and plant the seeds. And so this was a movement to get women in the farms. And they didn't own the farms, they were just doing manual labor. But it was work that was considered men's work that only men could do. So they needed to have a big movement to call them the Women's Land Army instead of just, can someone please milk my cow? I don't care if you're a man or a woman. Just fill up this bucket with milk at 4:30 in the morning. They were called farmerettes, by the way.
Yeah. I think
yes, because in 1917, you throw an et on something.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure the women or the girls' sports teams, when mm-hmm. I was in high school, were ets. I think they were the Raiderettes.
Yeah. There's drum majors and then drum majorettes. Mm-hmm. X was thrown on a lot, like not just dominatrix is the only word that survives as like the female dominator, but inheritrix was a word for a woman that inherits money mm-hmm. instead of just an inheritor. And there's a list of others that I have. I've forgotten because I didn't think that was going to come up today.
Sorry.
I thought we were just going to talk more about 1980s robots, honestly. And I'm impressed and subdued that we haven't talked about
it. Well, last time we recorded, yeah, we talked about the robot from Rocky.
Yeah.
And now we're, you know, it's a running theme. Next episode, Johnny Five. I'm thinking that's what our next, we're coming up on the end of 1917.
The end is in sight, yeah.
So, I don't know if we're going to continue this or move on to another thing. I'm thinking we could do a different robot every week.
Ooh. What would be the lead-off robot? Who would you want? Johnny Five?
Well, do you go through every single Transformer?
or would it be a big
general Transformer?
Technically, are Transformers robots? Does the fact that they're from an
Transformers,
alien...
Transformers, robots in disguise.
Okay,
It's in the song.
Yeah, but we consider them robots, but they would consider themselves aliens, right?
I bet they would call themselves robots.
But are we just flesh robots, then? If they lived, they weren't born, they were, I don't know how they were created. Oh, shoot, I do know how they were created. They were created by the AllSpark, but I wish I didn't know that.
Created by HalSparks, what was that?
By the AllSpark. HalSparks did not make the Transformers. Okay, one last thing I learned from the Library of Congress World War I exhibit before we move on. The Hoover Pledge Card, this goes back to Waste No Food. This was a pledge to conserve food because they're obviously not going to have an army of people to make sure that you finish your plate of beans without throwing them away. It was just a way of getting people to be conscientious about not wasting food.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very conscientious about that.
You're not very good at saying that word, right?
No. It was a minefield of trying to say that.
Yeah, I could see the regret you had as soon as you attempted it.
I was trying to think of a synonym halfway through. Like, can I back out? No, just keep on going. Doesn't matter if you lose a leg. Finish the word. This is where Hubert Hoover got his...
What?
This is where Herbert Hoover got his claim
Hoover,
to
fame. You're in a lot of trouble.
I'm having no big trouble today. So, the reason why Hubert... Shoot! I was trying to gloss over it.
Don't you dare try to edit this out. Don't you dare.
I promise. Okay. The way Herbert Hoover got famous was because he was Mr. Fix-It when it came to the food problems. He found ways of rationing. He found ways of getting more out of every crop yield. He was considered the person who saved us from famine and in World War II and beyond. So when the Great Depression happened, he seemed the perfect person to deal with it. But he wasn't, because he had a whole bunch of solutions, but none of them worked. That's not his fault. His fault, though, was when the solutions didn't work, he just said, okay, well, we're just going to tough it out until it got better. Which is the same thing I did in when I was 19 years old and my car needed an oil change. It was like, well, just tough it out. And it'll be fine.
Yeah. It won't be oil anymore.
Yeah. Eventually, that light will go away and I won't get a terrible ache whenever I drive the car thinking that I deserve death. But it started with the Hoover pledge cards. Oh, I was going to tell you about my my hard way of getting to D.C., which is entirely voluntary.
What made you decide that you needed to get this Library of Congress card?
If you want to do anything in the Library of Congress other than take a tour, you need to get the researcher card. And they make it very easy. There's a form to fill out online.
And it's much better than, like, New York Public Library or...
They have a whole bunch of...
Bloomfield Public Library.
Well, those are lending libraries. If I was doing research about the history of Bloomfield, then the Bloomfield Public Library would be fine. And the New York City Library has a huge amount of resources, but I think you need to be a New York City resident. Mm-hmm. It's such a great library. I'm sure they have people from outside New York that come, so maybe they have some special lending card. I haven't looked into that. But for the Library of Congress, all you need to be is an American over 16. I'll tell you off air what I was looking at, but it was very impressive, and I can't believe they just let me in to take a look at it. I had full on national.
It was vintage Erotica, wasn't it?
1978 isn't vintage. So I just couldn't believe that they let me in to see it. Like, I'm just a person. They didn't even ask, like, who I was or why I wanted to see it. It's honestly one of my favorite things about America right now, mm-hmm. that hardly anyone knows about it. But it was like imagine if there was just an ATM that gave you free money. And like, oh yeah, this ATM has been like that since 1983 or so. You just put your card in, say how much money you want, and free money comes out. It's like, wait, why doesn't anyone do this? Like, most people don't really know, but it's been working for a long time.
So you got to do all this, and all you had to do was travel for 4 hours.
Well, it was like 5.5 because I decided to take a bus down instead of taking Amtrak or driving. Mm-hmm. I have a car, I could have driven, but I wanted the time to myself. I didn't want to just drive.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you were like, I want to get to Washington, and I want it to be sad.
And I want it to be inexpensive. So... the only way I could get there in time was to take a megabus leaving from Secaucus at 4:45 a.m. Mm-hmm. So there's pathetic and sad, and the people I was riding with, there's one woman with terrible sniffles who was just like...
What were they going to Washington for? Like, that's what
I don't know. Luckily, she got off in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. but then...
Well, they weren't like I'm literally, but they like, you know... Like New Jersey's congresspersons going down to...
And then two guys with horrendous body odor got on. Because I guess it's not a bus unless there's someone who decided that showering is a weekly privilege.
Were they traveling together?
They were traveling together.
Oh, okay.
And they sat... At first I thought they were going to sit next to me. They sat in front of me. And their BO was so bad, if I lean forward... I'm going to lean forward like 3 inches now. If I lean forward 3 inches, it was... noticeably worse. And if I leaned forward 6 inches, it was even worse. Mm-hmm. And I started to like concentrate on the miasma. Like, I can actually smell deodorant in there. That's like one of the worst bottoms of the miasma, that it has like sports scent mixed in.
Did you couldn't just move to a different seat?
It was so early in the morning, I was barely conscious. I put some movies on my iPad, I was watching, and I kept on like drifting off and falling asleep. And I was by a window seat. And normally when you're a passenger in a vehicle, you can look out the window. So I kept on doing that, because it's rare that I'm in a car, but I'm not driving. Mm-hmm. So I kept on looking out the window and then forgetting that I was watching a movie. So I kept on going back and realizing I missed something important. but I wasn't going to go back because, you know, at 4:45 a.m., the movie you chose to watch was obviously not going to be a movie that you have great comprehension of. But eventually I got there, and I had a great day in D.C., and on the way back, I had thought I should take Amtrak back. But Amtrak's like $100 more expensive, but, you know, should I treat myself? And I decided, no, I'm not going to treat
myself. Suffer on the megabus.
This was Greyhound.
Oh, right. And that looks like a step up, though.
Oh, it's not.
Oh, okay.
No, I waited outside in a parking garage for an hour and a half, and then a voice of the telecom said...
In my mind, Greyhound's Coca-Cola, Megabus is like RC.
Well, in reality, Megabus is it's like a microbrew.
Mm-hmm.
And Greyhound is like Miller Lite.
Okay.
So I wanted to get on the Miller Lite bus, and they canceled it. It was supposed to leave at 5:15. At 5:45, they said, bus is canceled. You can get a refund. So I went and got a refund. They asked, well, when's the next bus? And I go, the next bus is at 2 a.m. Get you in at 6 a.m. And I was like, that's a hard pass. I mean, I didn't actually say that because I don't have any testicles. But at the time, I can't do that. I guess I'm going to live in D.C. right now because I don't have any way of getting back.
Yeah.
But I went down one flight of stairs because I was in Union Station, and there was an Amtrak terminal, and there was a train leaving in 15 minutes. It got me into Newark an hour earlier than I would have. I sat in comfort. There was a beautiful 4-year-old Australian girl who I talked to on the flight or on the trip. There was...
You have kids and you bother talking to other people's kids?
She started to talk to me.
Because I'm so happy for those moments when I do have my kids. I have no interest in anybody else's.
But she had an Australian accent. You never get that nowadays.
Yeah, true.
You definitely wouldn't have gotten that on a bus.
No.
These were good parents. They wouldn't have brought her on a bus. It took her all the way to America not to have her ride on a bus.
Mm-hmm.
She was going in comfort.
Oh.
And she called me a trickster.
A what?
Trickster.
A chick star?
A trickster.
Oh, trickster.
I was trying to do an Australian accent.
Oh, all right.
It's harder than you would think. Especially if you try to also do the 4-year-old girl voice.
Mm-hmm. And if you're bad at doing voices in general.
Oh, yeah. It's the trifecta of problem cases there. Having a birthday this week is June Allison. She was born 100 years ago today. And we know her best, unfortunately, or maybe not unfortunately, for the commercials she did for Depends Undergarments. Is that what you were going
to say? I don't remember. Who's June Allison? Do I really know this?
That's the only way I know her. Because she did commercials for Depends, the adult diaper. And they weren't just commercials. There was a huge ad campaign.
Was she in the diapers?
Kimberly Clark. She wasn't in the diaper, no. No, she wasn't like a Three Stooges character.
Mm-hmm.
But she brought to light incontinence as like an actual issue. It used to just be like an embarrassing thing that no one would talk about, but she was on TV talking about it, and she probably went on, you know, Donahue and the other shows of the day to talk about incontinence in the elderly and how this is an actual thing that happens to millions of people, and there shouldn't necessarily be as much shame and embarrassment about it because there's ways of fixing it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by fixing it, I mean you
wear a diaper.
You wear a diaper.
You're fixing it.
Yeah.
You're masking it, really.
But the life she led before she was an adult diaper spokesperson was very similar to a lot of the other like actresses of her day that we've talked about. She had 4 marriages to 3 husbands, which makes me think that marriages were just kind of a common thing back then.
Mm-hmm.
That it was like leasing a car.
It seems like Hollywood marriages work better now.
Yeah.
Than they used to.
Yeah, or maybe they're just...
Something I'm learning from the show.
Yeah, maybe they're just better at keeping up the scam.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing about one couple that had a divorce, and I didn't even know that they were married. And it turned out they got married and lived together for 6 months, and then they separated. And then, like, 9 years later, they announced they were getting divorced. So I wasn't paying attention the day that they were a couple, but then they just lived separate lives their whole time and never appeared in public together. So you would never know that they were ever together. Mm-hmm.
Who was this? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was Nicolas Cage and Patricia Arquette.
Oh, I didn't know they were together.
They were together for like 9 years.
No idea.
Or 3 weeks, depending upon how you do the math. She was a petite person. She was only 5'1". She was under 100 pounds.
So what did she need adult diapers for? She could have just got regular baby diapers.
The size 6?
Yeah.
She was one of those like triple threats. If she could dance and she could act and she could sing. I'm sure she did a lot of like touring, playing in Copacabana's, stuff like that. She looks like Kristen Bell. If you made a movie about the life of June Allison, you would cast Kristen Bell, who's also a petite person who can sing and dance and act.
There's something like kind of comforting in that like mm-hmm. the unattainable woman of your youth will one day be, you know, pissing herself.
She won a 1951 Golden Globe, which shocked me because I did not know the Golden Globes were around back then.
Mm-hmm.
When I mean, I don't think about the Golden Globes very much, but I always think of them as like, oh, yeah, they're that thing that wants to be the Oscars. But
yeah,
they've wanted to be the Oscars since, like, the time our grandparents were born.
I feel like it's caught on recently because now the whole thing is it's the Oscars, but they're drunk. They make a big deal about that.
Yeah, now that it's mm-hmm. televised.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it had any prestige beforehand or if this is just how every industry works, that actors have always had prizes thrown at them. They come up with new prizes. And if you went back in time 300 years to like London, the stage, there were like 5 different groups that were giving out awards back then, too.
Well, I think I remember hearing something about that. The Oscars were created because it was like bad publicity in Hollywood.
Oh.
Well, what was that?
Could be.
There was like a couple of different scandals. Like, I think it may have been, like, in response to Fatty Arbuckle.
Fatty Arbuckle.
Not, yeah, like, yeah. I think it was...
Norma Desmond.
Yeah. There was somebody else in there, too, that had, like gonorrhea or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, who was that? Was it Douglas Fairbanks?
Errol Flynn was...
Really Errol Flynn. Announced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eric Stone Street from Modern Family is trying to get a Fatty Arbuckle movie made.
I feel like every fat actor wants to play Fatty Arbuckle or Ignatius Riley. That's like every fat guy, every fat actor is like, I'm working on these two movies and I really want to do the Fatty Arbuckle story and I want to play Ignatius Riley. Like, as soon as you say that, you just know, like, you know, your arteries are going to clog. And you're just going to drop dead. Like, if you look at like John Candy and Chris Farley, they all were going to play Fatty Arbuckle and Ignatius Riley.
You're right.
If I'm Eric Stone Street, just shut up about it, man. They call the Fatty Arbuckle dream the Widowmaker.
We're going to try something different for our Nickelodeon. We are going to act out an actual old vaudeville sketch. This is Dr. Cronkite and His Only Living Patient by Smith and Dale. We found a version on YouTube, but we're going to try to act out the good parts of it. Do you want to be Smith or Dale?
I'll be Smith, and you can be Dale.
Okay. Both these guys, because their names are Smith and Dale, they were obviously Jews who changed the name in very heavy accents. I don't know if we're going to do the accents.
Let's not, because I've heard you try. I think we should be wearing, like, hats or something. Is there any hats available?
Oh, yes.
Wait, yeah, hold on, yes. There's a hat over here.
Yes, there's a cowboy hat and a pirate hat.
Why?
I have daughters.
Oh, okay. Let's see. I don't see the cowboy hat anymore.
Oh, it's smushed into the side.
All right, let's see. Oh, okay. Is it?
Should I do a cowboy voice and you do a pirate voice?
No.
No?
Let's not do voices.
Let's just wear this.
We're doing vaudeville.
Okay.
I'm in the pirate hat. You're in the cowboy hat. Yeah, we're a doctor.
And a doctor and a patient.
Yeah, no, you're like, because you have the cowboy hat, you're like, you're one of those like old West doctors. We're calling you just Doc. Hey,
I'm
Doc.
I'm Doc Holliday. Okay.
Yeah, you're Doc Holliday and I'm,
Okay, so I'll be Dale then, because Dale is a doctor.
Yeah, and I'm Smith. Is there a Smith pirate? I don't...
Oh, there probably is. I'm not good on pirates. But yeah, let's say there is.
There actually. What's
okay.
This? Okay. Yeah. Are you a doctor?
I'm a doctor.
I'm Dubious.
I'm glad to know you, Mr. Dubious.
Okay. Look at this, doctor.
Look at... Oh, that... There. Did you ever have that before?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you got it again.
There wasn't too many other forms of entertainment at the time.
No, there wasn't.
Oh, okay. All right. I got rheumatism on the back of my neck. It's a bad place to have rheumatism on the back of my neck.
No, no. Where would you want a better place than on the back of your neck?
On the back of your neck. I can't sleep at night. I walk around all night.
Ah, you're a somnambulist.
No, I'm a night watchman.
He's a classic.
All right. Doctor, it hurts when I do this.
Don't do that.
If you can't see right now, guys, I'm jacking off.
I wish you were just miming it.
My neck hurts me. Doctor, it's terrible.
Oh, well, sit down and open your neck. Mister, please, I got no patience.
I shouldn't have been here either.
Then the patient explained he has already seen a doctor.
All right. He told me I had snoo in my blood.
What did he tell you?
He told me I had snoo in my blood.
Snoo? What's snoo?
Nothing. What's snoo with you?
We need a rim shot.
Yeah, I know. I know. All right, let's do one last one here.
Okay.
All right. You know. Okay, you told me that your fee's $10.
Now, my fee is $10.
For what?
For my advice.
$10 for your advice?
That's right.
Well, doctor, here's $2. Take it. That's my advice. That's not even a... That's not a very good joke. Is that even a joke?
It's an okay joke. With the delivery, I'm sure it's great. And these guys did this exact routine for like 50 years straight. Mm-hmm. They started off, well, yeah, kind of young. And then we're still wearing the hats and we're looking at each other with the hats.
Despising each other, I imagine.
I should add that your hat is from the Disney Channel original movie Descendants 2, and it has a bunch of teal dreadlocks in it because you are Uma, the daughter of Ursula.
I'm not the daughter. I figured I was Captain Hook's daughter.
No.
Does Captain Hook have a kid?
Yeah, but you're Uma, the daughter of...
Who's her father?
Ursula. They don't get into... You only need one parent.
In I haven't seen it. My kids are a little too young for Descendants, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that, you know, has, of course, that would lead the question to me of, where is Ursula, like, does she, you know, is she asexual? You cut off one of her tentacles.
And it just spawns.
And there goes Uma.
Yeah, Ursula doesn't show up in this movie. They don't have enough money for that.
Mm-hmm. Who else has a kid? Which other villains?
Oh, I don't want to talk about Descendants. It's so much of my life already. I don't want it to bleed into.
All right, just give me one or two.
Okay, there's a... Jay is a son of Jafar.
Jafar, okay. Jafar.
And Mal is a daughter of Maleficent.
And there's no explanation of who these
No, and Evie is with. A daughter of the Evil Queen. And as you can tell, all of these people named their children after their own first initial. Or first syllable.
And you know who I'd be very surprised if they had a kid? Hmm. The Prince from Robin Hood.
Maybe he adopted.
Mm-hmm.
On to our quiz this week. We're going to rattle through this quiz.
I'm putting my pirate hat back.
Okay.
I don't want to mess it up.
Yeah. I hope you don't have lice.
I don't.
Okay, because I don't want her lice and my daughter's lice to interact.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too much lice. Okay, so our quiz this week, it's a very quick one. Walter Lord is having a birthday 100 years ago this week. I love Walter Lord. He's a fantastic writer.
Okay.
And I'm just going to tell you the title of the Walter Lord book, and you tell me what it's about.
All right.
His first book was his most famous one. It's A Night to Remember.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what A Night to Remember is about? Got very popular in 1997. Titanic. Yes. This was basically how he set up his template for all of his books. He would talk to 50 or 60 different survivors of a great event in America's past, and he'd just write it all up and put out a 200-page volume of all this new information. And it would become like the definitive telling of all of these great events. Okay. After A Night to Remember, he wrote The Night Lives On. What was that one about?
The Night Lives On. Let's figure this out. Okay, so it's not a sequel to A Night to Remember, right?
It is. It's just more stuff about Titanic.
Okay.
He found more survivors and just wrote more stuff. Day of Infamy.
Pearl Harbor.
Pearl Harbor. Good. This one's tough. Incredible Victory. This is a World War II story.
D-Day?
No, the Battle of Midway. Oh. But that was a solid guess. He was mostly a Pacific guy. Peary to the Pole.
Peary to the Pole. The journey to the North Pole.
Arctic exploration, exactly. Yeah. Yes. I was going to correct you to say the Antarctic, but no, you were right. Peary was North Pole, not South Pole. Dawn's Early Light. This one is hard, but it is just barely attainable.
So you go to National Anthem in there.
Yes.
Dawn's Early Light.
Uh-huh.
That's one of those, something with the War of 1812.
Yes, it's about the War of 1812.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, specifically the Battle of Baltimore. This one is impossible. A Time to Stand.
Let's see. A Time to Stand. All right, something to do with standing up.
Yep.
Let's see. When do people stand? I'm thinking something about Rory Calhoun. He was the guy in the movies. There's always standing
up. It was so hard for me to not make a Rory Calhoun joke, and then you just made it.
Yeah. Anyways.
Trying to keep Rory Calhoun out for just 1 week. But A Time to Stand was the Alamo.
Okay.
The Past That Would Not Die. This sounds like a Tales from the Crypt episode.
Mm-hmm.
But no. This one is about the civil rights movement.
Oh, okay. This is like a reach on that one, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Not all of his titles are have real like click in value as like, oh, this is a definitive tale. Let me get a little hoarse. The Good Years.
Let's see.
Was about a book before a big event.
Let's see. This is, I'm guessing, leading right up to the Great Depression, right before the stock market crash.
Close. Goodyear's was before World War One. I should actually track down that book.
I think my answer counts.
Technically, it is before the Great Depression.
Yes, before the Great Depression.
Yes, you could have said Babylon, and that is before the Great Depression. Yes. Okay, I'll give it to you. The Miracle of Dunkirk. That one got very easy thanks to the Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah,
it's about Dunkirk. Officially called Operation, I don't remember.
Operation Dunkirk.
And then the last one is called The Lonely Vigil. I'm just going to tell you, but I thought it was interesting. It's about coast watchers who were people that were put onto remote Pacific Island, and their job was to just live on the island, and if they saw the Japanese Navy steaming by, they were to call for help.
Mm-hmm.
That was their only job.
Those were guys that, like, they didn't tell them the word, right?
No, that was on the Japanese side.
Yeah.
This was on the American side. Like you join the military, like, okay, your job is to go to this remote island in Vanuatu and just live there for the next, I don't know, 7 years. And here's lots of money to live off of it. If you see 19 Japanese battleships, just give us a ring. Mm-hmm. That's your only job responsibility. And that concludes 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. Join us next week when we talk about Thelonious Monk. Until then,
ahoy, hoy.
Ahoy, hoy.